All right, let's dive deep into the Exodus. This epic journey out of Egypt, it's a story that's captured imaginations for centuries. But pinpointing when it actually happened, well, that's a mystery that has scholars going back and forth. You sent us some fascinating notes from a seminary class. Looks like it was taught by Robert Van Noy, an expert on the book of Exodus.
Yeah, Van Noy, he's a sharp guy.
So let's see if we can untangle some of this debate about the Exodus timeline using his insights.
Sounds good. You know, when you really get into it, it's amazing how many different opinions are out there about when this all went down. Mm-hmm. But when you boil it down, it's really a two-way race. The early date theory and the late date theory.
Okay, so let's break it down like historical detectives. What's the evidence that makes the late date, that's around 1250 BC, right? What makes that theory so compelling?
Yeah, 1250 BC. And one of the biggest pieces of evidence is actually right there in the book of Exodus itself.
Really? So the text itself gives us clues about its own timeline.
It does. It specifically mentions the Israelites building the cities of Pithom and Ramses. And we know for a fact that a pharaoh named, you guessed it, Ramses, ruled during the 19th dynasty of Egypt. That lines up perfectly with that 1250 BC time frame.
Okay, so it's like finding a name tag at a crime scene. It seems to connect the story to a specific place and time.
Right, but that's just one clue. The late date proponents, they've got a whole arsenal of arguments. For example, let's say the Exodus happened earlier, like in 1446 BC. The Israelites would have been wandering through Moab and Edom.
Right, those are key places in the Exodus narrative.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Archaeological surveys of those regions suggest they weren't heavily settled until around 1300 BC.
Ah, so if no one was living there, the Israelites couldn't have wandered through. It's like a historical alibi.
You got it. It's all about connecting the dots. Another interesting point, think about the book of Judges. That's the book that picks up the story after the Exodus. It never mentions any big Egyptian campaigns in Canaan led by pharaohs like Seti and Ramses. And these were major figures.
Yeah, you'd think if their reigns overlapped with the period of the judges, there'd be some record of those conflicts.
Exactly. It's like a missing chapter in the story. And then there's the Meremptah Steel, which is like a historical deadline.
A deadline. Okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
This inscription, it's from around 1220 BC, and it clearly mentions Israel already existing in Canaan.
So the Exodus had to have happened sometime before that.
That's the logic. But don't jump on the late date bandwagon just yet. We've got a whole other side of the story to uncover.
All right, let's hear what the early date proponents have to say. What's their strongest piece of evidence?
Their anchor point is a verse you highlighted in your notes, 1 Kings 6.1. It states that Solomon began building the temple 480 years after the Exodus. And we can date Solomon's reign pretty accurately, which leads us back to, you guessed it, 1446 BC for the Exodus.
So they're working backward from a known historical landmark. It's like using a map to retrace someone's steps.
Precisely. And there's another intriguing character who fits into this early time frame, Thutmose III.
Thutmose III, wasn't he a pretty powerful pharaoh?
Oh yeah, he was a major builder, known for his massive construction projects. And guess what? He relied heavily on forced labor to get the job done.
Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? Like the story of the Israelites building Pithom and Ramses.
It's a striking parallel. Plus, Thutmose III lived a long life, which fits the biblical description of Moses' lifespan as well.
Okay, so we've got a pharaoh who fits the profile and a timeline that lines up with the Bible's internal clock.
Exactly. Oh, and then there's the curious case of the Habiru.
The Habiru? Who were they?
Well, they pop up in these ancient letters called the Amarna letters, complaining about some troublemakers in Canaan around the time of, you guessed it, the early date. Some scholars think these Habiru might be connected to the Hebrews.
Like ancient rebels stirring things up.
Right, maybe. But hold on. Habiru might have been a more general term for different nomadic groups. So the link to the Israelites is, well, it's debated.
So it's a potential lead, but not a smoking gun. It's amazing how we're piecing together this puzzle with bits and pieces from all over. The Bible, archaeology, ancient inscriptions.
You said it is like a giant historical jigsaw puzzle.
Oh.
And speaking of puzzles, there's one piece that's particularly hard to fit in. The ruins of Jericho.
Oh, right. Jericho. The famous walls came tumbling down. What role does it play in this Exodus dating mystery?
Well, it all comes down to the destruction layer at Jericho. That's the archaeological evidence of the city's destruction. And the timing of that destruction, it's been a source of major debate.
So how does Jericho fit into the puzzle?
Well, if the Israelites destroyed Jericho as they entered Canaan, then the date of that destruction would be a huge clue, right?
Right. So which way does the evidence point?
That's where the debate gets heated. And it's a story that deserves its own chapter.
All right, so we're talking Jericho, this ancient city, and it's got a starring role in the Exodus story. But why is it such a battleground when it comes to figuring out when the Exodus happened?
Well, to understand that, we got to dig a little deeper, literally. See, archaeologists, they look for these layers of destruction in the ground, right? Like a footprint of the past.
Okay, I'm following you. So the destruction layer at Jericho, that's the key piece of the puzzle.
Right. Now, one of the big names in archaeology, Kathleen Kenyon, she excavated Jericho back in the 50s.
Wow, way back.
Yeah, and she concluded, based on what she found, that the destruction there happened way earlier, like around 1550 BC.
1550, that's way too early for either of the Exodus dates we're talking about then.
Exactly. Too early for the early date, too early for the late date, it just doesn't fit. But then, decades later, along comes another archaeologist, Bryant Wood.
Okay, so a new set of eyes on the evidence.
Right. And Wood, he challenged Kenyon's conclusions. He said, nope, I think she misidentified the right layer. He proposed a later date for the destruction, somewhere around 1400 BC.
Which would line up nicely with the early date theory.
You got it. So now we've got two respected archaeologists looking at the same site, but coming up with very different interpretations.
It's like they're reading two different books, even though they're looking at the same pages.
That's a great way to put it. Wood argued that Kenyon, she based some of her dating on the fact that she didn't find certain types of pottery that were common around 1400 BC.
So, absence of evidence.
Right. But Wood, he said, hold on, maybe those pottery types just weren't present in the specific areas she was excavating. You know, maybe that part of Jericho wasn't as wealthy, so they didn't have the fancy imported goods.
Ah, so it's like saying just because you don't find a smartphone in someone's pocket doesn't mean smartphones don't exist.
Exactly. It's all about context.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Jericho, and this makes the whole debate even trickier. Over time, a lot of the archaeological evidence from the late Bronze Age, it's gone.
Gone, like vanished.
Yeah, erosion, human activity, even earlier excavations that weren't as careful as they are today, all those things contribute to the loss.
So we're working with an incomplete puzzle.
Yeah.
Some pieces are missing.
Right. So it's even harder to draw firm conclusions.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. This whole Jericho debate, it really shows you that archaeology, it's not just about digging stuff up. It's about how you interpret what you find.
Yeah.
And this is where Professor Van Hoy's analysis comes in.
Okay, so what's Van Noy's take on all of this? Is he Team Kenyon or Team Wood?
Well, he lays out all the complexities of the Jericho debate, but he does seem to lean towards the early date theory.
Really? So what leads him in that direction? Is it the Jericho evidence or is there something else?
Well, for one thing, he points out that the late date theory runs into a problem when you look at the Book of Judges. If the Exodus happened around 1250 BC, that doesn't leave much time for all the events in Judges to happen before the reign of Solomon, which we know began around 966 BC.
So it's a timeline squeeze.
Exactly. It's like trying to cram a whole week's worth of clothes into a tiny backpack. Something's got to give.
I like that analogy. It makes it really clear. So, does Van Hoy talk about those destruction layers we talked about earlier, the ones in those Canaanite cities, the ones some people see as proof of the Israelite conquest?
He does. And he raises a really interesting question. How can we be so sure that it was the Israelites who were responsible for those destructions? Maybe, he says, maybe something else caused them.
Okay, so if it wasn't the Israelites, who are the other suspects in this ancient destruction mystery?
Well, remember Pharaoh-Merneptah, the one with that inscription mentioning Israel? He also bragged about his military campaigns in Canaan. So it's possible that some of those destruction layers, they're his handiwork, not the Israelites.
So the Israelites might not be the only ones who were tearing things up in Canaan back then.
Exactly. Now, here's another twist to throw into the mix, the Sea Peoples.
Okay, I've heard of these sea peoples. Weren't they like the pirates of the ancient world?
Well, they were a force to be reckoned with. Around 1200 BC, they swept across the Mediterranean, disrupting everything. Imagine all these seafaring warriors causing chaos wherever they landed.
Like a tsunami of warriors. That must have shaken things up.
It did. And guess where they eventually settled down? The southern coast of Canaan. They became the Philistines. You know, the Israelites' arch enemies in the time of the Judges.
So the Philistines were descended from these mysterious sea peoples? That's fascinating.
It is. And those sea peoples' migrations, well, that could explain some of those city destructions too. It's another piece of the puzzle to consider. And that brings us to another fascinating twist in this whole Exodus dating saga. Have you heard of John Bimson?
Bimson rings a bell, but I can't place it.
He's a scholar who's proposed a pretty radical idea. What if we adjusted the traditional archaeological timeline?
Wait, are we talking about rewriting the history books?
In a way, yeah. He's saying that the Middle Bronze Age, which we usually think of as ending around 1500 BC, should actually be pushed down closer to 1400 BC.
So he's shifting the whole chronology by a century. That's bold.
It is. He argues that certain archaeological evidence, including some of those destruction layers we've been talking about, actually line up better if we make that adjustment.
So if Bimson is right, it could change everything. It could move those destruction layers at places like Jericho into a time frame that supports the early date for the Exodus.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Not everyone agrees with Bimson. His theory has caused a lot of debate in the archaeological world.
It's amazing how one person's idea can shake things up like that. So what about Van Noy? Does he buy into Bimson's revised timeline?
Well, he doesn't exactly say yes or no. He presents it as a really interesting possibility, but he's also cautious. He reminds us that this whole dating debate is complex, that we need to be careful about drawing conclusions based on any one piece of evidence.
So he's saying don't get too attached to any one theory. Which brings us back to that quote from Alan McRae. I think Professor Van Noy mentioned it.
Ah, yes. McRae's wise words. McRae had some really interesting things to say about the dating debate. He basically warned against treating the Exodus dating question like we're lawyers in a courtroom trying to win a case.
Yeah, that can be a trap, can't it? You get so focused on proving you're right that you forget about actually learning something.
Exactly. McRae, he really emphasized the importance of humility. You know, admitting that we might not have all the answers yet and being open to new discoveries and new ways of looking at things.
That's a great point. There's always something more to learn. It takes the pressure off, too. We don't have to have everything figured out right this second.
And that's what makes history so exciting. It's a dynamic field, always changing, always evolving. What we think is a fact today might be challenged by new discoveries tomorrow.
It really makes you wonder what amazing finds are still out there waiting to be uncovered. Maybe a lost scroll, a forgotten tomb, something that could completely change our understanding of the Exodus.
The possibilities are endless. But even without those hypothetical discoveries, you know, Professor Van Noy makes a really important point that goes beyond just the specifics of when the Exodus happened. He says that the very act of debating the date, it actually reveals something deep about how we humans try to make sense of history, archaeology, and faith.
So it's not just about finding the right date, it's about something bigger.
Yeah, it's about how we approach the past, how we weigh different kinds of evidence, and how we try to reconcile different stories, different perspectives.
It's like we're trying to put together a giant puzzle, but we've got pieces from different sets all mixed together, ancient texts, archaeological finds, religious beliefs, and sometimes they don't seem to fit.
It's a real challenge, figuring out which pieces go where. And that challenge, it's not just about the Exodus. It's something that historians, archaeologists, anyone interested in the past wrestles with constantly. How do we know which sources to trust? How do we make sense of evidence that's incomplete or open to interpretation?
Those are big questions. They really get you thinking.
And Van Noy, I think he's following in McRae's footsteps here. He's encouraging us to embrace those questions, to keep searching and questioning and exploring.
Yeah, he doesn't give us a simple answer, but he gives us a direction, a path to keep following. So as we wrap up our deep dive into the Exodus, we've explored both sides of the dating debate, looked at the evidence, considered the challenges, and even contemplated a whole new timeline.
And through it all, we've been reminded that history is a process, not just a set of facts. It's an ongoing conversation, a journey of discovery.
That's a great way to put it. To our listener who shared those fascinating lecture notes with us, thank you. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep that curiosity alive.
Absolutely. The past is full of mysteries, and unraveling them, it's a journey worth taking. Thanks for joining us.